Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. Good to see you all here today. Happy Mother's Day. I'll add mine to that too. Complicated as it is, something we don't want to just gloss on over. So we are switching gears here a little bit this week. We are still talking third way. So if you haven't been around, what is third way? Third way is this possible way of dealing with all the stuff that we just get stuck on, that we just can't make progress in our life. There's so many of those areas, you know. So third way isn't just another way. It isn't just, you know, halfway between all the places where we are stuck. It's a new way of approaching things. It's saying that we can continue, well, we can unlearn and we can learn. We can continue to learn, and we don't have to ever pretend we've got it all figured out, but we can go forward with humility and with that learning posture into the future. So, I mean, that's what the third way is all about. And unfortunately, and this is on your outlines, if you want to look on the back of your Sunday paper, there is an outline. You're welcome to follow along. You certainly don't need to. Some people like to do it. It's just you hear things, you see things, you write something. But then the big thing is that you write some of your own ideas, because that's what we really want to be about here, is starting a conversation that you can make your own this week. Anyway, unfortunately, the third way probably isn't the way that you've been taught or the way that you think most of the time. And I don't say that pointing fingers at you. I mean, this is kind of true of all of us. It's certainly true of me as well. We tend to think in ways that are much more fixed, that are certain, that are simpler, that are kind of wooden. It's much easier to be certain. It's much easier to have things just sort of worked out so we know how it's supposed to be. But, you know, the problem is that it doesn't work, at least not very long. I mean, just think about all those areas in our lives where we are stuck, where the wheels just seem to be spinning, all the way from politics to our possessions. I mean, it's all these things that we've taken our stand, we think we know how to do it, and we've divided into our opposing camps. There's us and there's them, and nothing is going anywhere, and we are just stuck there, and that's kind of what we've been covering for the last 4 weeks. So, a pretty accurate way of understanding Jesus, if you're, you know, thinking this third way, a pretty accurate way of understanding who Jesus was and what he was doing was that he was here trying to get us into a third way of living, a third way of thinking, a third way of being. And he was kind of doing that from the very beginning. So at least according to the Bible, the very first time Jesus, you know, has a public speech, or he's, you know, talking to crowds, it's recorded in Matthew chapter 5. It's sort of all about this. So he starts out the whole thing, and you may recognize these lines. Happy are those who, and then happy are those who, and happy are those who. And the funny thing is everybody's saying, no, those are not the happy people. Those are the miserable people. And Jesus goes, then happy are those. No, those, not them either. I mean, he's got such an unconventional way. Obviously, he's looking at something different. He's evaluating the whole thing differently and encouraging other people to evaluate everything differently to see, like, who is that complicated word that we translate as happy or as blessed? You know, who are those people? And then right after that, he goes into this long string. In fact, that last song that the band played is picking up on that, where he says, you have heard it said, ... but I say unto you. He does it 6 times in a row, one after another. Like, I think he's trying to tell us something. Happy are, you have heard it said, all kinds of things. But that's the common knowledge. That's conventional thinking. But I want to tell you maybe a different way of doing it. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth, according to that song. How's that working for you? All you blind, toothless people out there, you know? Like, yeah, let me introduce to you a different way. So we're still working on this third way of life, but we're moving the focus to what I believe is probably the most harmful stuck place in our lives. It's kind of underneath all the other ones. We need to figure this one out first, really, before we can move around to any of the others, and that is our relationships. In fact, that's what we're going to be doing for quite a few weeks here. We're going to be looking at a third way of being in relationship. Now, I don't know about your mom, but for my mom, thinking of Mother's Day, of all the things that she wanted us to take care of, it was our relationships. Because without them, pretty much everything else we valued was out of reach. We weren't going to be able to act on it. We weren't going to be able to reach it. So in that regard, I feel kind of like a mom myself, in the sense that if Jacob's Well is about anything, this church that we are together, if this is about anything, it's about building significant relationships. Significant relationships with our true selves inside of us, so we can actually get to know like who Greg is, or you know who that person inside of you is. These significant relationships with others in our world, the people we love, the people we have to interact with, and then not just the people, but all of creation, this complicated, beautiful, fragile world that we have. And also significant relationship with that which is beyond, above, beneath, within, throughout all things, that thing that for shorthand we call it God. Building those kinds of relationships together, that's what it's all about. So as we dive into this, I just have to do a little disclosure too, and that is as the material that we present here on Sunday mornings is you know stuff that we work out, and it always has a multitude of sources. I mean, we're influenced by so much, and do a lot of research, and the staff works together, and there's so much stuff that you guys send us stuff, say, you know, Greg or Melissa or Paul, you know, I was watching this or I heard this or I saw this and it reminds me about the kind of stuff we're talking about, Jacob's Well, and you send it to us. Please keep doing that. It's unbelievably helpful. But particularly in this series, as we're talking about third-way relationships, I just have to say that a lot of what we're talking about is kind of synthesizing some thinking that came from Andy Stanley. It comes from Stephen Covey and Karen Stevenson in particular, and certainly others as well. But we're going to talk about it really in a way that we, I think, have synthesized it and understand it as a community. So a word of thanks to those people and as we go on. Okay, so relationships. Why are they so hard? And if, you know, why are relationships so hard for you? And if they're not so hard for you, I would just like to say welcome to the planet Earth. We call this Earth, we call ourselves human beings, and we tend to find that relationships are really tough. So if you stick around on this planet long enough, you might discover that as well. Okay, now seriously, I mean, that's part of the human experience, right? Enjoying all the benefits of relationships, but also getting dragged into them and knowing how difficult it is and how impermanent and how changing they always are. These lifelong partnerships and marriages are probably kind of the quintessential examples of what these relationships are about and maybe what pops into our head immediately, but that's really only one form of them. I mean, maybe the most intimate form of our relationships, but it's the same stuff that is behind and makes all of our relationships work, whether it's at work or at school, whether it's your friends or maybe it's your neighbors, and certainly those things that are going on at home as well. So we'll be thinking about all these, but see, what's going on is this. As I enter new relationships, I don't enter with a blank slate. Like, I don't come into a relationship like that. You maybe think you do, but when I come to a new job or I meet a new friend, when I move in with some new roommates or I start thinking about that person as a potential life partner, I am really like kind of a phone that you went and you picked it up at the phone store and you brought it home and you think you just got a phone, but it's actually been preloaded with all kinds of software and apps and stuff like that that are in there and they're working already, and no, you cannot uninstall them. They are in there and they're coming along with you. Andy Stanley probably knows more about how to make sense out of our relational stuckness than anyone else that I know of, calls these our hopes and our dreams and our desires. And that's what I bring, all right? A mostly unconscious and often unspoken set of hopes, dreams, and desires, okay? You do that too. These are your HDDs. This is your hard disk drive, preloaded, ready to go. It's going to be plugged into whatever you're doing, and it's going to inform everything, whether you know it or not, whether you're aware of it or not. Now, you're probably thinking, or you may be thinking, well, you know, maybe that's true, Greg, but I don't know. I don't really think I come with a whole lot of stuff. I think I'm pretty open and just adaptable to the situation. And, you know, there's nothing really particular about my hopes, dreams, and desires or anything unusual. Yeah, right. just go try them out on someone else. You'll realize how particular and how unusual yours are. I mean, they're normal because they're yours. But we all have our own sets, and we all bring them to our relationships when we come to them. Just think about it. When you start a new job, you have these ideas about being included in the decision-making. How does that work for you? Being recognized for the potential that you represent. You want to be treated certain ways. You dream of maybe getting a chance at trying your hand at some big project or something there so you can really prove yourself, and you expect people to, one, pay attention to you and to actually then give you credit for what you're doing. You're hoping that this job could actually be fulfilling for you, be meaningful work, and that the relationships you would have at work might be life-giving to you. We have all these hopes, dreams, and desires that we bring to that situation, and guess what? It's up to everyone else to fulfill them for me. That's their job, all right? We do similar things with our friends, and boy, do we ever do it when we start, seeing someone, i.e. dating, swiping right, with someone and with the eye that, well, maybe I would want to spend my life with that person. I mean, all of a sudden, there's a whole cloud of things that are going on in our heads and in our hearts, again, that we may not even be aware of. Everything from, how many kids do we want, or do I want, to, and how are we going to do the chores, and what kind of life goals would we pursue, and what is a house that we're going to live in going to be like? What sort of neighborhood do I want to be in? And the kind of yard and stuff, the space around my house, what I want it to be like. Are we going to keep our house really tidy all the time, or are we just like going to move every 2 years? There's a million different kinds of questions like that. What's most important? Or is it going to be financial goals, or are we going to be adventurous? Are we going to talk about everything and really, you know, work things out together, or are we each going to take responsibility for our own stuff and work it out and just kind of report in to people after we've got it figured out? Are you going to be kind to me? Will you say what you're thinking even if it hurts, or are you going to spare me the criticism? Are you going to remember me on Mother's Day or on Father's Day or on Valentine's Day or my birthday or our anniversary? And how are you going to remember me? There's a lot of stuff going on there. And then there's all the negative sort of things that you also define in your hopes and dreams and desires. Like, she wouldn't ever do that, would she? Or he wouldn't ever do that. Or, of course, this would never happen in my relationship. Or, I really hope that we don't ever have this happen between us. So much stuff like that. Now, sort of the quintessential example of it is good old Snow White.
Someday my prince will come. Someday we'll meet again. And the way to his castle we'll go. To be happy forever, I know.
Excuse the rough editing here. Yeah, the sloppy editing is because I really couldn't stand to listen to the whole song again. just take it to that final line, someday when my dreams come true. You know, we have so much inside of us. And we want the other person, whether it's at work or this friend or our neighbors or this, you know, kind of life partners, we want them to fulfill it for us. We want them to fulfill our hopes, dreams, and desires. Now, I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but Jesus kind of blows this up for people, and he wants to blow us up for us, and we're going to kind of follow him through that this week and next week. But the fact that he wants to do it might be why Jesus isn't always all that popular, at least not with everybody and his time. He had a third way of looking at these hopes, dreams, and desires that everyone kept laying at his feet, and There's one story from him that just drove me crazy as a kid, and I've kind of grown to appreciate it. I want to talk about it today and next week. It's in three of the Gospels. The stories of it's the first books in the New Testament of the Bible that talk about this the life of Jesus, and so Jesus is in a really popular phase at this point. I mean, you couldn't get a ticket to one of his speaking engagements, not even on StubHub. No, but kidding aside, I mean, it was. There's like huge crowds following him everywhere he was going. And so he's speaking at this house, and it is so crowded. It was kind of like the 2 Mile Sand concert last night. I mean, there is no way you could get in because of the crowds. And that was for you guys. Anyway, so he's speaking in his house, and it's just jam-packed. But there's this one man in that village who's paralyzed. And he has the hopes that maybe Jesus could heal him from his paralysis, right? So some of his friends decide they can take him and maybe help him, realize his dreams. So they can't get in the door. There's so many people. So they go up on the roof of the house, and they tear away some of the thatching, and they lower him down to the floor right in front of Jesus, like Jesus can't miss him, and maybe this is why his desires are going to be fulfilled, right? And Jesus is so impressed by how much trust these friends of Jesus and this paralyzed man had in his ability to help him realize his hopes, dreams, and desires that he looks at him and says, "Son, your sins are forgiven." What? Gee, hold it. Wait. No, Jesus, he didn't come here for you to tell him his sins are forgiven. He came here for you to heal him. But no, Jesus says your sins are forgiven. Now, there's a lot more to that story, and I'm not going to take you there until next week. It's actually our soap reading, our kind of Bible reading for the week. And if you look on the back of your Sunday paper, you'll find these right here, but I'm pointing it out because it's wrong there. I was supposed to change it, and I didn't. So where it says Matthew 22, it should be Mark chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Just read. It's the first story on Mark chapter 2. And read this week, and you can puzzle over yourself and see what I'm leaving out. But this is what Jesus does. Jesus has this guy bring his hopes, dreams, and desires. He wants to be freed from his paralysis, and Jesus says, "Your sins are forgiven." Like, what's going on there? What's going on there? And the idea is not just fulfilling it. Now, like I said, there's a lot more going on there. But what I want you to see is that you come to your relationships with this full bag of hopes, dreams, and desires, okay? You guys recognize these milk crates? Yes, good things coming. All right, this is the position. These are your hopes, dreams, and desires. They're my hopes, dreams, and desires. And when we come into a relationship, we hand them to another person. We say, "Here, have my hopes, dreams, and desires." I'm not actually going to give it to you, but in real life I would, all right? And please, would you fulfill these for me now, all right? And the thing is, we don't always say it. We don't even always acknowledge that we've handed them over. We may not even actually be aware that we have handed them over to you. But catch this. As oblivious as I might be in that I just gave you my hopes, dreams, and desires fulfilled for me, just fact that I'm not really aware that I did does not mean you don't have to fulfill them. All right? I mean, does that sound familiar? Have you done that to people? Have people done it to you? Now, in your Sunday paper, you got a half sheet of paper. All right, pull that out right now. I bet there's a bunch of extras, right? If you didn't get one, we can get you one. You got a couple people are going to pick them up and hand them out if you didn't get one. Just take a look at that. So these hopes, dreams, and desires, they are not bad things. That's the first thing to get out of our heads, all right? They are not bad things. Most of us have pretty good things within them. They reflect... what did we say last week? They reflect the fact that you are the image of God and you have the ways of God written on your heart, right? I mean, your hopes and dreams and desires come out of that. Some of our hopes, dreams, and desires aren't quite as deep as that. In fact, some of them probably aren't even all that healthy or they're not all that noble at all. They may come from myths we have bought, misconceptions that we've tied into and things like that. They might even come out of the dysfunction that we've grown up with or have built around ourselves. But all that we carry around with us. So where do these hopes, dreams, and desires all come from? Because I think this is important. You'll find on that paper, the first column is, what are your hopes, dreams, and desires? And there's a couple different situations with your life partner, at work, with your friends, etc. Just to break it up. You can create your own categories, of course. The next one is, where do they come from? Sometimes it's helpful to know where those hopes, dreams, and desires came from, because it puts you in charge of them, right? You can control them rather than controlling you. I mean, sometimes they come from our personalities. I don't know if you're a Myers-Briggs person or a StrengthsFinders person or an Enneagram person or if you've got your own inventory or if you just don't like any of that. But a lot of our hopes, dreams, and desires are tied into our actual personality. Maybe you can't even control a lot of that, but it's certainly there. Some of them come from the media. TVs, movies, songs, the billion ads that are, you consume every day, whether you want to or not, whether you know it or not. and they start informing this what you think life should be about and who what other people should be doing for you and how those things should be working. Some of them come from role models, people you've been around and you sort of said to yourself, I kind of would like to have that person's life, or I want to do things the way that that person did things. The strongest influence on our hopes, dreams, and desires comes from the sample size of one that you had growing up, your family of origin. And you say, well, you know, all of us think that our family growing up was normal. It's not. It's normal for you because it is the growing up you had. And it doesn't really matter whether you liked it or didn't like it. It is the impressions that were put into your head at such an early age that it's sort of pre-conscious, and it just sits there, and it's in charge of so many of your hopes, dreams, and desires. Okay? So as I said, a lot of this is unconscious, and the thing is that the unconscious hopes, dreams, and desires are harder to control than the conscious ones. And if we can be aware of them, it's a lot better. So what I'd like you to do right now is I'm going to give you a couple minutes to work with that piece of paper, okay? This is actually a project for you to think about this whole week. In fact, I invite you to take it to group life if you're doing that this week, and kind of puzzle through it with each other. So that's, what are some of the hopes, dreams, and desires that you have, especially in these different kinds of relationships you have, and where do you think it came from? And once you kind of know what it is and where it came from, it can help you evaluate it a little bit better. Like, is this one that's really important to me? And actually, now that I think about it, it's sort of strong, but it's not actually that important for me. All right? So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to work on that. And no, I'm not going to make you talk to anybody about it. All right? So you can actually tell the truth. So go for it. I'll bring you back in a couple of minutes. We'll take this to the next step. All right, so, I don't know, is that easy or is that hard, or? Well, work on it, this week. Maybe I can help us understand even a little bit more about why this is important, all right? So the question I want to ask then is, so what is so stuck? You probably are already kind of seeing this coming. It's not rocket science by any means, but let me spell it out. First, when we come into relationships, there's not like just my hopes, dreams, and desires. There are two sets of them. Okay, there are my hopes, dreams, and desires, and then there are also your hopes, dreams, and desires. Right? But you notice that the two crates don't say my and your; they say my and my. Right? Right? Because each of us, it's not my and yours, both of us are an I. Both of us are a me. Both of us are looking at my hopes, dreams, and desires. Right? And what do we want to do with these? We want to give them to each other. And you know what happens when I give you my hopes, dreams, and desires? What does that feel like? It doesn't feel a whole lot like hopes, dreams, and desires, does it, when you get mine? What does it feel like? When we give each other and trade our hopes, dreams, and desires, guess what they turn into? Expectations. Your hopes, dreams, and desires have suddenly become my expectations. And you know what expectations feel like? They feel like responsibilities, demands, duties, ought-tos, requirements. They feel restricting, not freeing. Now, I'm going to make an assumption here. I don't think any of us come into a relationship saying, or look for a relationship saying, I just want to find someone whose hopes, dreams, and desires I can fill with the rest of my life. I mean, look at even Snow White, who's sort of the quintessential 1937 unassertive stereotype, right? And what was the last line of her song? Someday I will fulfill Prince Charming's dreams. I will make Prince Charming's dreams come true. No, that's not what she's saying. Someday my dreams will come true. I don't think we need to scold ourselves for it. I mean, that's just how we are. That's how we're wired. That's what we're thinking. And that's kind of where we get stuck. And we need to do something that's a little bit different than that. So what happens when we get stuck with these is when we have these two me's fighting, these two I's, pushing against each other to see who's going to prevail, I think there's three different reactions that happen. The first one is that you take your HDDs, your hopes, dreams, and desires, and you go, all right? Enough of this. I quit. I'm done. I'm out of here. That person isn't going to fulfill my hopes, dreams, and desires, so there's no reason for me to stick around any longer. So what I do is I pick up my hopes, dreams, and desires, and I go. Well, that stopped that situation. It solved that problem, didn't it? But did it really? I mean, what the problem here is when you go to the next relationship, the next job, the next friend, you know, the next roommate, whatever it might happen to be, your hopes, dreams, and desires go with you. And do you think they've really changed? Probably not. Do you think the expectations that they will become for the next job, roommate, friend, lifelong partner are going to be any different? Probably not. So you got some basic math here to do with each of these, all right? So with this one, it works like this. You got one plus one, me plus you, or me plus me, right? Together equals two. But we're going to split, so divided by two, you're back to one. Not a lot of progress. In fact, one is hopeful at that point. My guess is that there was enough damage done. There's enough embitterment. There's enough blaming the other person for the fact that it didn't work, that maybe you're actually down below one a little bit on that whole scale. Okay, so that's one scenario. You take your hopes, dreams, and desires and go. The next dead end, the next stuck place is that someone is going to try to win with their hopes, dreams, and desires, all right? Going to prevail over the other. I don't want your expectations, all right? I don't want your expectations, but you do want my hopes and dreams and desires, right? Can I convince you of that? We all laugh. Well, how ridiculous. Yeah, we all do it all the time, all right? I mean, this is probably the most common pattern that we go through on all of this. And it doesn't really work so well. I mean, remember on the very first week of the series, we talked about how we kind of deal with this. This stuck place is a place of certainty. Like, I know that my hopes, dreams, and desires are good ones and the right ones, and you should be fulfilling them for me. And so in order to do that, I use any form of coercion that I might need to do in order to get you to do that. And then the end result is that I get you to conform, meaning I get you to conform to my hopes, dreams, and desires. We aren't going to conform towards yours, right? Because mine are the right ones. So what that really is doing is it's getting us both in one place. Rick, you can do this with me. Come on up here for just a second. Can you climb on there with me? Yeah, this is dangerous. All right, so this isn't this great? Ah! All right, that's close enough. You get the idea. And actually, that's about how long it really works, too, for most of us. But we get both fulfilling my hopes, dreams, and desires. Like, what could be better? We now got two of us doing my thing. I mean, that's great. I love this. What a win for me. Unfortunately, it's not such a win for you, is it? I mean, my win is really kind of your loss. So, see, the problem is that you fulfill my hopes and dreams and desires, but you give up yours. And that can be okay for a while. I mean, the pressure's off. I may be a nicer person to you all of a sudden. Kind of all that coercion ends a little bit because you've agreed to do this, and so I'm nicer. So maybe you think that's okay, but it's not going to last very long because you're going to get tired. You're going to get restless. You're going to feel what you're lost in this relationship, and you're going to be trying to find ways to do it. So then what do I have to do? I have to up that coercion again through whatever sorts of ways I might happen to do it. Manipulation, through passive aggressiveness, through emotional or verbal abuse, threats, maybe just whining and pleading. There are a million ways we do it, and you kind of nickel and dime the relationship to death through this. Melissa Locke, when you're talking about this, says, this feels like death from a thousand cuts. And I think, that's exactly what it's like, just these little things that gradually just bleed you dry till you're dead, and resentment follows. And the thing is, it isn't just a loss for the person who had to give up their hopes, dreams, and desires to fulfill yours. It's also a loss for us. All right? It's a loss for the relationship. And if it's a loss for the relationship, sooner or later, it's a loss for me too. It wasn't the way to work this out. So the simple math here is that this is 1 plus 1 equals 1 with a question mark. Mine. All right? The opposite side of the coin is, it was 1 plus 1 equals 0 for you, which means all of this is probably short-lived. Okay, so a third way of approaching this, the third stuck place that we often follow is you can always compromise, right? Now, if you've been around Jacob's Well long, you know that I am not a big fan of compromise. And I know there's a lot of people who argue, I can't believe how often people tell me that compromise is a secret to marriage. Compromise is not the secret to marriage, okay? Now, I will acknowledge that some people, when they're thinking about compromise, are thinking about it a little bit differently than I think it actually is, and they may be doing some different stuff with it, but I really don't think it is the way to do that. I mean, compromise aims too low, and it hopes too little. It's not a bad option. I mean, if you can at least compromise, you can probably keep your relationship together. You can probably be okay. You can go the distance through life with that, or you can stay at work. You can put up with those roommates. But there's not a whole lot. And here's the thing is, with compromise, no one really loses, but no one really wins either. I mean, you know, what is that all about? The relationship doesn't even win. The relationship just sort of keeps going, and it keeps going. So this is one, if you do the math again, 1 plus 1 equals, I'll give it a 0.7, all right? Because neither of us are getting quite what we wanted, all right? I came with my 1, you came with your 1, and neither, we both had a compromise, so it kind of adds up to a 0.7. And that's assuming you're pretty agreeable on stuff. I mean, if it's really contentious, if you're always having to negotiate everything, good to see you there today. If you're always negotiating everything all the time, then it might be more like 0.3 or 0.4. You know, I mean, it's really, the thing is, and you find that on the outline, it's enough of your hopes, dreams, and desires to make you stick it out, and not so much of their expectations to make you quit. Wow, what a call to relationship, you know? Enough to stick it out and not so much to make you want to quit. I think we can do better. Now, do you see that compromise is not a third way? So the thing is that compromise isn't really what we always say it is. Compromise is not halfway between your hopes, dreams, and desires and mine. Compromise is we're going to do mine now, and then we're going to do yours. And then we're going to do mine, and then you're going to do yours. Take a concrete example. Like if you decide in a married relationship, we're going to split the holidays. We're going to do Christmas with your family one year and Christmas family with my year. It isn't like, okay, my parents are in New York, yours are in L.A., so we're going to do every Christmas in Kansas City. I mean, that's here in the middle. No, it's going to be mine and yours. All mine, all yours. All mine, all yours. All my ideas, all my interests, all yours. We're going to go back and forth, and we're going to go back and forth enough that no one ever gets too mad, too angry, too upset, ready to leave the thing, and we're constantly adjusting it. So with this, you can get along, you can have a mutual life, you can be partners, but there is something better, okay? There's something better than that. This is not the third way. So what is the third way? What is the third way? That other way, you know, what are the questions we ask when we start thinking, like, well, what is the third way? What's another way that is still fair, but doesn't make me deny all my needs? I think that's probably where we go. And to that, I would ask, is that really a helpful question? We're going to really take that one on next week. How can 1 plus 1, and the feeling there is, be more than 2? I mean, that's the promise of a relationship. 1 plus 1 is more than 2, and I think that's why we get into these relationships, to realize more than we could have had apart, right? So, thinking about this, you were probably all wondering when the plank was going to get added between the two positions, right? Because this is everybody's favorite part. So the thing is, like, what would it look like for me to leave my hopes, dreams, and expectations, and for you, I'm purposely not walking across it yet, because we're not ready for that yet, and for me to leave my hopes, dreams, and expectations, to let go of these two things, and for both of us to walk towards the middle, just be glad there aren't two of us doing this. I'm illustrating by myself. But we're both walking, letting go of our positions, coming to the middle, looking for something that neither of us have ever had before. It's bigger, it's better than any of our hopes, dreams, and desires. What I want to do is to help you develop a vision for what your relationships could be like that are something you haven't imagined yet. They will make you and the other people that you are in relationship with be happy to leave their hopes, dreams, and desires behind because there's something brand new that is that much better. A couple of hints of what they are, because I'm not going to tell you. That's next week, all right? We're going to talk about that next week. But a couple of hints is, one is there's far too much me in my hopes, dreams, and desires. That's number one. Number two, Jesus said this. He said, there is no greater love than this, that one would dot, dot, dot. What did he say? There is no greater love than this, than one would. I'm not going to tell you. You can look that up, all right? Piece these things together, and we're going to come back to it. So we're going to dig into this next week, and this, actually, I think the way Jesus answered that, finished that sentence is troubling. It's not what I want to hear. It's going to take a lot of trust for me to go, to walk onto the board, if that's what it's all about. But let's open ourselves to see our own two hearts and those of the people in our lives and perhaps even God, this one who calls us beyond to do that, so that maybe there is something here that is abundantly far more than all I or you could ever ask or imagine. And that be ours. Join me in a word of prayer. God, you call us into this position. We're all sitting in our chairs and thinking about arrangements for the day and what we have to do. And the people and how this applies more to the people that we know than to us because we've got it more figured out than they do. Yeah, help us just to do our part. Help us just to spend some time thinking about where our lives are going and what they're about. Help us have that humility. Help us to open ourselves to you and to one another and to maybe even hear that voice of our inner self calling out to us. Yeah. Help us use this week that way. We pray this in your life-giving name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.